It's time for the Brew and Shavers Sports Podcast. Coming at you every week to talk all the things that make us love sports. The games, the rivalries, and of course, the personalities.
The March. I almost said the March, man. I'm going to go to the Walmart.
I like indefinite articles, okay?
Can we just start over?
Absolutely.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's episode 4 of season 3 of the Brew and Shavers Sports Podcast. Whether you're watching us on YouTube or you're listening to us on your favorite podcast platform, thank you so much for tuning in for this week's episode. Last week, Darren, we started off with some birthdays, and this week we've got a really big birthday to mention. It's not related to football, but one of the most recognizable figures during March Madness is Sister Jean, and who supports her beloved Loyola Chicago men's basketball
Absolutely.
Team. And today she turns 104 years old.
Man, that is so incredible. How cool is that? 104. And probably still, I would assume, unless we've seen something otherwise, still active and wondering and worrying about what the basketball team's going to do next and how their designed plays are going to work. If I were to guess, I would assume that's part of what's going on.
Isn't that a beautiful thing?
Oh, it's amazing. Absolutely incredible.
So happy birthday to Sister Jean. And Sister Jean, you're probably not listening, but in case you were, you might have a grandchild or a great-grandchild who's a football player in Missouri, and I've got big news for you today. Darren, we talked about this before we went on the air. When this first broke, the Missouri legislature is doing its best to keep in-state recruits home to the tune of, if you sign with an in-state team, you can get NIL money in high school.
It really is amazing. And this is, you know, the way the NCAA dealt with this whole thing was, okay, every individual state is going to make up their own laws, their own rules. And the Missouri legislature passed a law and the governor signed it that said exactly what you said. You can, if you commit, once your letter is signed, it's not just an oral commit, you know, the commitments where, you know, they're a strong commit and all that stuff. It's once you have signed your letter of intent, then your NIL kicks in and you are open to any NIL possibilities that can be signed. So if you're a football player, it's December of your senior year, you can actually begin earning money. And if you're a basketball player, it's November of your senior year that you can start earning money. But another interesting part of the bill is also now coaches and other employees of the school, of the college, whatever college you've committed to, can now be an active participant in your negotiations for your NIL deal. So I don't even know how that exactly, are they opening up to where maybe you can have a member of the football staff or the basketball staff, whoever it is, or maybe a few members of the athletic department that are there to help negotiate those deals. If that's what they're doing, that makes sense to me a little bit, but the whole thing still feels really scary. There's a lot. I mean, basically we're talking about a senior in high school starting to get a check because they've committed to somewhere before they even step on campus. That, to me, that's enticement for the purpose of recruitment in every way possible.
I'm thinking about the NIL money going into the hands of seniors. That's going to make for like the most incredible prom ever.
Now that's a very valid point. It's going to be a prom, a great graduation night. That's going to be.
Darren, do you think other states are going to follow suit?
I don't know. To me, well, you know what I say. I don't know. Yes. I mean, unless something happens very quickly in the process that makes this look like a disaster that everybody else just kind of wants to avoid, absolutely they are, because everybody else is just up. So you know that there's already conversations happening with state legislatures in Alabama and in, you know, Mississippi and in Tennessee, even probably here in Louisiana. And now that this is on the books and it's somebody – now it can be done. Until the NCAA steps in, absolutely, because it's just going to be a simple bill. I mean, this whole process in Missouri, I think it was like a 2-week process. The bill was produced right before they started voting on legislation. It was voted in and it was signed all in a 2-week process. So you would assume other states are going to do the same thing. So yeah, I would assume it's going to be very quick.
John. Yeah, I'm a little skeptical about it happening in Louisiana. We typically prefer to keep things off the books here in Louisiana. So
strong tradition of that.
well, we'll see what comes of this. Is it good for Missouri, or have they made a mistake here? And speaking of mistakes, Darren, we're not ones to throw stones. Last week we made a couple of our own.
Yes, we did.
Talking about the LSU Florida State opener, I mentioned the game is being played in Tallahassee. That is incorrect. The game is being played in Orlando.
Just a little farther south than Tallahassee.
I was within a couple hundred miles, I think.
That's right. You were. That's right.
Pretty close. I mean,
I think that's not bad. Map,
you know.
Yeah, that's right. That's not bad.
Now, but we also had another faux pas, and that was
that may not have been as small.
Peyton and Eli Manning. I think, Darren, you referred to Peyton's production company as
Big Head Sports.
It must have been the helmet behind me. It's a bad influence.
I will never convince Tennessee fans that that was inadvertent. Because the name of the company is Omaha Productions, but at some process, the videos that he and Eli put out together on YouTube, their own things, at some point he was talking about the production company and Eli took a shot at him and said, you should name it Big Head Productions or something like that. And that's what stuck in my head in that moment. But even while we're having this conversation, I had to go ahead and highlight Missouri High School because I forgot to do that. So we're rolling with mistakes. We can do that.
So if you catch a mistake that we make on an episode, which is very likely, then let us know about it. We'd like you to send us a message. We'll put it on the next episode. If you catch us in another mistake, then please let us know and we'll own up to it because, hey, you're looking at the production and the research team right here.
That's right. That's exactly right. And if you comment, you get to interact with us, even if, it's, come on, guys, really? Big Head Productions, whatever. It's a comment. It's interaction. We can talk about it the next week. That'd be awesome.
Well, speaking of awesome, if you live anywhere near the Memphis area and you want to catch a college football game, the University of Memphis is offering a deal for you. If you buy a $60 ticket to their home opener against Bethune-Cookman, then if they win, you can get a free ticket to the next game. And as long as they keep winning, you get free tickets to the game, the upcoming game. So I saw Brett McMurphy reported on this, Darren, and you start looking at the schedule, it could go down to Tulane.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, they've got, is it Bethune-Cookman? And then they've got Navy. There's some games that are very, very winnable games, which, by the way, another interesting thing about this, just looking at how Memphis has played over the last few years, I think it's like over the last 10 years, I believe that's right, they're 53-9 at home. So, they've got a pretty good track record of winning games. Now, I know it's got some other sponsorship name, whatever goes first now, but still, it's the Liberty Bowl in Memphis. I don't know what bank is a part of it now. But so to have that many wins over at home over a 6-year period, I mean, there's some possibility here.
Yeah, they open up with Bethune-Cookman. They have Navy, Boise State. Now, that might be a tough one.
Yeah, that could be.
Followed by Tulane, USF, SMU. Yep. That's their home schedule. So I don't think they're going to run the table on their home schedule, but still, it's a pretty good deal if you love going to college football games.
And I think it's a fantastic it's a really good idea. I read some of the comments that this is something maybe it's been tried before in like the CFL, Canadian football, some different places. But still, I think when you're in a city like Memphis where you have to compete so hard for entertainment dollars, I think this is a brilliant plan. I'm very impressed with Memphis coming up with it and deciding to do it. I'm excited. You know, it'll build some national attention because if they win a couple and it starts to roll, I would assume it'll be talked about even more because people are starting to get those free tickets and it's really starting to build up. So pretty interesting.
Speaking of national attention, Jim Harbaugh has seized it for another week. And we're not talking about X's and O's here.
No.
The University of Michigan has decided to suspend Harbaugh for the first three games of this season.
Mm-hmm.
It's a move to hopefully lessen the punishment that will come down from the NCAA. So, Darren, my question to you is this a good move? Will it accomplish what they hope to, or will it be completely irrelevant in the eyes of the NCAA?
I think all it'll do is limit the amount of games. Because I've read some things today, actually, that said there is some thinking with the four-game suspension falling apart that it may end up being a six-game suspension that comes down from the NCAA. And that was the reason they kind of settled on three. Let's go ahead and get three of them out of the way now. So maybe it'll be three this season and three next season. So during the offseason when the NCAA makes their decision, they'll say it's a six-game suspension. Three have already been served. We'll do the first three games next season in the same way. And from Michigan's perspective, if that is how it works out, it's a pretty smart deal because they've made sure that this season and next season, it's all non-conference games. You know, you're not going into the heart of your Big Ten conference schedule with your head coach out. So if it works out that way, I can see what they're trying to do. But to me, it's still kind of an odd thing for the NCAA to say, no, we're just not going to do this four-game suspension that we had initially talked about. And the school comes back with, oh, so we'll do three. Surely something like that's going on because that's the only reason they would try that. To me, nothing else makes sense. It's kind of a weird deal, but if that's what ends up happening, it's a smart move by the school and it makes sense.
We'll see. The good news is we are in week zero, so hopefully football will take center stage and not this unfolding drama with Harbaugh Absolutely. And the NCAA.
Absolutely.
We've got some football to talk about, more SEC previews, but before we get to those, let's pause for This Week in Sports History.
August 24, 2008, the Summer Olympics in Beijing officially come to a close as the most watched event on TV ever. According to Nielsen Media Research, nearly 5 billion people, or 70% of the world's population, tuned in to watch some part of the games. The opening ceremony alone attracted an estimated 1 billion viewers, making it the most watched TV program in history. The games featured 10,942 athletes from 204 countries competing in 28 sports and 302 events. China topped the medal table with 51 gold medals, followed by the United States with 36 and Russia with 23. Some of the most memorable moments of the games included Jamaican sprinter Usain Bolt's world records in the 100-meter and 200-meter, American swimmer Michael Phelps' 8 gold medals in the pool, and Chinese gymnast Li Ning's torch lighting at the opening ceremony.
Oh, thank you.
Usain Bolt and Michael Phelps. Wow.
Talk about, isn't that incredible?
Phenomenal athletes.
Yeah. What they did and what they accomplished for extended period of times, not just that one Olympics, but for extended years. It really is amazing.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Let's get into some more SEC previews. Let's start off with our friends over in Oxford, Mississippi. Let's talk about the Ole Miss Rebels, coached by Lane Kiffin, who we've talked about quite often on this show before. He's in his fourth year at Ole Miss with a record of 23-13. His 12th year overall with a record of 84-46. Last year's Ole Miss team was 8-5, overall 4-4 in the SEC. They run an offense with two coordinators, John David Baker in his third year and Charlie Weiss Jr. in his second year. And Darren, last year they set a rushing record, over 3,300 yards rushing, and they had a pretty good running back in Quinshon Judkins.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That dude. And, you know, I think it was, wasn't it last year during the season, the picture went around on social media of Lane Kiffin sitting basically at his high school game at Quinshon Judkins High School in the rain. Boy, you're talking about a trip that paid off, because that dude is going to set some serious records during his time at Ole Miss and just can't. It doesn't seem that he can be stopped. You know, his size is obviously an issue. You worry about wear and tear on his body. But as long as you're fast enough that you keep people off of you, you know, and they can't catch you, that becomes a little bit less of an issue. So, their offense is going to be interesting this year. They still haven't named a starter for their QB starter, and man, their QB room is incredible. The people that they have in that room with transfers and everything else, but it seems that Jackson Dart kind of is the leader in the clubhouse, but at the same time, the transfer from Oklahoma State, Spencer Sanders, you know, every time you hear somebody say, well, Jackson Dart seems to be the leader in the clubhouse, that's kind of an obvious thing. You know, the conversation kind of comes back to, but there's just no way in this world Spencer Sanders transferred not to play. So you don't know how that's all going to shake out, but no matter how it shakes out, what an incredible QB room that they've got. And that's got to make them feel a little secure of the things they can try and do. And I'm excited to see what their offense looks like this year, for sure.
They certainly have a lot of firepower. You mentioned the quarterback room. Jackson Dart had a pretty solid season last year. Of course, Spencer Sanders, the dual threat. I think Walker Howard is probably odd man out this year in that competition. But he's got a bright future.
Definitely.
Last year, Ole Miss had the fourth best offense in school history. So we've talked about Lane Kiffin being an offensive mastermind, and he's got the tools to do it. In the wide receiver room, you got Jordan Watkins and Dayton Wade and Malik Heath and Jonathan Mingo. And you got some transfers coming over as well. You got Chris Marshall from A&M and Trey Harris from Louisiana Tech and Zachary Franklin from the Roadrunners, one of your favorite teams in the past, Darren.
That's right.
UTSA. That's right. They got some solid tight ends. So offensively, they're going to be pretty solid. On the defensive side of the field, they have Pete Golding coming over after 5 years at Alabama.
Yep. Interesting move.
Surprising move.
Yeah, definitely.
Golding's defenses have been consistent top 10. He's done a very good job. And that was at Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Now, coming over to Ole Miss, they don't quite have the defensive acumen that Alabama does, but they've got a huge transfer on the line from North Carolina State. Joshua Harris, this kid's 6'4", 325. He takes up space. They've got some good linebackers and Kahari Coleman and Monty Montgomery from Louisville. And the word in their secondary is defense is transfers.
Yes,
they've got, absolutely. I'm looking at one, two, at least three. They're going to have to replace Tysheem Johnson, who left them to go to Oregon. So when you look at Ole Miss on the defensive side of the ball, Darren, is this a work in progress, or do you think Golding works magic and the unit performs well this year?
I would be surprised if they don't take a step up, just simply because of the transfers that they brought in. And I think there's going to be some benefit to having Golding there. But also, I think one of the other benefits that he really brings to the table is not going to show dividends this year, as big of a dividend this year. again, I think they take a step up, but they'll definitely be the weakest link of the two sides of the ball. I think what really, when Pete Golding is really going to show why he's there, is going to be next year. I think there'll be an even bigger jump because he's known for recruiting in Mississippi. They're going to have 2 years in his system. So I think next year will be the year that people go, holy moly, where did that defense come from? Again, they'll be the weaker of the two, but I would be surprised if they don't take a step up this year and show, I would say what you would see is marked improvement. You can tell it's a different defense, a different style of defense, and they're accomplishing more, shutting down the run more, you know, however that fleshes itself out. But again, next year will be the big time, but still an improved defense this year for sure.
Kiffin's teams are always fun to watch, and now bringing in Pete Golding, they could be quite a force to be reckoned with on both sides of the ball. So
we'll look forward
to watching them. Let's move over to Missouri. Every time I think of Missouri, I think of Missouri as a border state. And but you know, before we talk about Missouri, Darren, I jumped the gun. I'm thinking about the Civil War, border states, guns. I tell you, it's because it's 189 degrees outside right now.
That is correct. Everything is just baking. It doesn't matter where you are in Northwest Louisiana. Even if you're inside, everything is just baking. Today was 104. Tomorrow's like 106. And that's actual temperatures. That's not a heat index.
We planted a bunch of, my wife had picked out plants this spring that we planted, and they were doing great. And then this heat, and I tell you, I don't know how many of them are going to make it.
I would say not many.
Asked her last night, did you water your plants? She goes, it's over. It's over. They're done. I'm like, we can't give up. We've got to keep fighting. Press on. It's week zero. Come on.
I'm worried about watering me.
Let's talk about Ole Miss's schedule. Way off track here. So they open up with a real big barn burner against Mercer. That will probably be one that will keep us all on the edges of our seats. But you can't fault them. Other teams do that as well.
Exactly.
Then an interesting matchup against Tulane, which was a very strong team last year.
Yep.
Darren, that could be a really interesting game to watch.
I tell you, if there is any kind of step backwards, with change in defensive coordinators, that's where it'll really sneak up. That kind of test early in the schedule, that could become a difficult game for them for sure.
Mm-hmm. Georgia Tech, they go to Alabama, so Tuscaloosa. That should be interesting. Pete Golding going back. Then they have LSU, Arkansas back to back at home. Travel to Auburn, Vanderbilt, A&M at home. Go to Georgia. Then they have UL Monroe, and they finish in the Egg Bowl with Mississippi State.
Yeah, and you know, part of what we talked about in each schedule is kind of identifying a little bit of a difficult stretch. And I'm telling you, you look at their schedule. Alabama at Alabama, and even though they're at home, to have a three-game stretch that's at Alabama, LSU, and Arkansas, that's a tough three games. That's going to be a hard couple of weeks, and you got to keep guys healthy, and you got to keep momentum going forward, even if a couple of those games get away from you and you lose them, that you've got to really going to have to fight to maintain during that kind of a stretch.
Yeah, when we start going through these team schedules, Darren, you can begin to see why the SEC is not that interested in expansion right now. Absolutely. These schedules are loaded, and sure, we'd like to replace the Mercer game with someone else, or maybe even the Georgia Tech game, UL Monroe game. But other than those, this is a tough schedule.
Very much so. Very much so. And I heard people talking today at a podcast I was listening to. They said, you know, everybody's so excited about expansion, but what do you really need to expand for if you're the SEC? And we've talked about it. You know, look at the teams you've got. And with Texas and Oklahoma coming, what are you going out to get? What are you gaining by expanding? And I just don't see what it would be. I mean, you look at this schedule, and this is without a Texas and Oklahoma in the mix. This is without divisions being eliminated where, you know, people you haven't played in a long time, you're going to start playing on a more regular basis. I think it's a strong conference, even if nobody else is added after Texas and Oklahoma.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's go back to Missouri, this border state, and let's talk about the football program there, because I know you're so excited. You got a Missouri hat on. You got, what's that quarterback? Is that Chase Daniels behind you?
Let me see if I can do this right. Chase Daniels wishes that that's Jay Cutler. We'll talk about him later.
if we have time, anyway, time's short. So our friend Eli Drinkwitz,
yes,
I butchered his name last week too. He's in his fourth year with a record of 17-19. Not that great. And Missouri fans, they don't, you know, they came into the SEC and they came in hot. And since those first couple of seasons of the SEC, they've not done so well. And so their 2022 record, 6-7 overall, 3-5 in the SEC. They've got a new offensive coordinator in Kirby Moore coming over from Fresno State, where the school averaged the team averaged 271 passing yards a game. They were the Mountain West champs. They have a quarterback, Brady Cook, a returner, but he's going to have competition from a transfer from Miami and Jake Garcia, and also Sam Horn is in the mix. So when you look at a new offensive coordinator, quarterback competition, what are you thinking, Darren? What does Kirby Moore bring Missouri, and who do you think is going to wind up being their starting QB?
I think Kirby Moore, you're going to see a lot more of what the offense, as far as from a design perspective, you're going to see a lot more of what the offense already looked like. I think one of the reasons why Eli Drinkwitz went the Kirby Moore direction is he found someone that can call plays that were running very similar styles. More than an offensive scheme change, he wanted to find somebody that he trusted the thought process that he could turn over play calling to. I think he felt like, if you're 3 years in and things aren't going well, you start firing coordinators typically is the way that goes down 3 or 4 years in. And he was the coordinator. So he fired himself basically and said, we're going to keep things the same for the most part, but you're going to be the play caller. I'm turning it over completely to you. And I think he's smart enough to get his ego out of the way and do that. Now, as far as the QB room, the understanding as of Eli Drinkwitz's comments on Sunday is it's down to Brady Cook and who was the other person? Sam Horn. I just went blank. It's down to Brady Cook and Sam Horn. Jake Garcia is probably going to be in the three spot. And Brady Cook and Sam Horn, even at this point, he's not going to name a starter. Both of them will get play time when we look at their schedule in those first two non-conference games. Then a decision will be made going into the conference, the first conference game on their schedule. So that's a pretty interesting way to do it, but I think he's showing that he's confident in both those guys, and maybe he feels like he gives them a little bit of a heads up to not name the starter prior to the conference when the conference games start.
Wouldn't be the first time a coach has done that.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all.
They've got several returning wide receivers, including a transfer from Oklahoma, Theo Weiss. Mm-hmm. They struggled with the running game last year, but they've got a big old offensive lineman transferring in from Eastern Michigan, Marcellus Johnson, who should help up front and give their running back, Cody Schrader, some more room to operate.
Yes.
Let's talk about on the defensive side of the ball. Blake Baker and DJ Smith run the defense for Missouri. They were fourth in the SEC in total defense last year. So that's a bright spot, something to build
Absolutely.
On.
Absolutely.
They've got some help on the defensive end side with Joe Moore coming in from Arizona State. They've got some terrific linebackers in Tyron Hopper, Chad Bailey, and a good solid secondary as well, Darren. So not a super flashy defense, but a pretty strong defense. Do you see this continuing this year?
I think they'll kind of maintain where they are, even if they were to take a step or two back, you know, still, okay, you're still in the top half of the defenses in the conference. And I think there's a legitimate possibility that, that's exactly where they stay. You know, the scheme they run is a very aggressive, you know, it's at 4-2-5 where you've got hybrid guys that, you know, line up a safety and come down and have the strength and the know-how to, end up right in the middle of the defense or right in the middle of the offense running through the line to, be aggressive in those blitzing schemes and stuff like that. So I think you'll still see a lot of that with them flying all over the field, that they've been bringing in the people, because the one thing you can't deny is that Eli Drinkwitz has recruited well. And as we talked about at the beginning of the show, he's got even more of an advantage now to recruit, especially in state guys. So they've recruited well. Those guys are here and have been a part of the system. I think, and honestly, they need their defense to be there, because I think they still are going to have some offensive struggles this year. Might be wrong, but I think they're still going to have some offensive struggles, and I think their defense will do the same thing they did last year and really help them out and give them an advantage in situations that, they need it.
Well, let's talk about their schedule. They start off with three straight home games, South Dakota, Middle Tennessee, and then a tough one, Kansas State.
Yeah.
They play Memphis. I believe that's at a neutral location before traveling to Nashville to play Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. They got LSU at home. They go to Lexington to play Kentucky. They got South Carolina at home. They've got to go to Athens to play Georgia.
That's right.
And then they have Tennessee and Florida back-to-back at home. And then they finish with Arkansas in Fayetteville.
You know, this schedule really kind of stacks up well for them. And I said earlier, talking about the two quarterbacks, that they wouldn't name a starter until they got into conference schedule. That was incorrect. It's the Kansas State game. They will have a named starter before the Kansas State game. And that's going to be a big test for them. You know, Kansas State is not to be taken. I know they're a Big 12 school. They're not an SEC school. But they are not to be taken lightly, especially if you're a Missouri. You know, we're not talking about Alabama or Tennessee or Georgia playing them. We're talking about Missouri. So Kansas State is not to be taken lightly. But they do have all four of those games at home. You know, if you're going to have to play LSU, at least don't have to go to Death Valley. You know, kind of the same thing for Tennessee. If you're going to have to play Tennessee, at least don't have to go to Knoxville. So those are some things that maybe can help their schedule in – even if there are a couple of ugly games where they really get taken out, at least it's home. You don't have the travel involved with it. And, you know, just like we saw with Georgia last year, when they're at home, things get to going right. You sneak up on somebody and you make it a fourth quarter game. Who knows what can happen? So and I think you obviously have a better chance of that happening in Columbia as opposed to Baton Rouge or Neyland Stadium, you know, in Knoxville. So I'd much rather have those two games at home.
Yeah, Missouri was in some games last year, some tough games, including, what was it, the overtime game at Auburn? It looked like they had that game won. And
oh, that's right. Yeah.
Some unfortunate things happened. And
that was ugly.
So I look for them to be in a lot of games this year and be competitive.
Agree.
Well, let's go over to South Carolina. Since we're talking about the Civil War, South Carolina, the first team to secede from, or the first team, the first state to secede from the Union.
See, you don't just get that history anywhere.
Fort Sumter. Yeah. So if your parents, if you love college football and you're like, you're watching the show and your mom's like, are you doing your homework? You can say, yes, mom, I'm doing my history homework.
That's right. I'm doing history right now.
So South Carolina, coached by Shane Beamer in his third year, a record of 15-11. Which doesn't sound that great, but in 2020, they were 2-8. In 2021, they were 7-6. Last year, they finished with a record of 8-5, including 4-4 in the SEC. They come with offensive coordinator, Dal Logans. He comes from Arkansas, where he was the tight end coach, but he's also had an NFL career. He's coached with the Titans, the Jets, the Dolphins, just three schools. that he's our three teams that he's been with. I'm telling you, this heat is like frying my brain. Zzz, can you hear it? It's like sizzling. Remember those commercials from the 80s, the egg and the skillet? This is your brain on drugs.
Brain on drugs. Yeah.
And this is my brain when it's 259 degrees outside.
Exactly.
I don't know why all my temperatures end in 9. I don't know why that is, but it's probably the heat.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Quarterback Spencer Rattler returns 3,000 plus yards last year. He's a good quarterback. He just was in a tough situation in Oklahoma because he was following in the steps of Heisman Trophy winners. But he'll be back for another year. He's got a great receiver in Antoine Juice Wells to throw to, an all-SEC performer, a tight end from Arkansas in Trey Knox, and a running back in Juju McDowell, who's going to have to step up big this year. Mm-hmm. So the offense lost some. They've got a few changes, but you've got that key position, veteran leadership from Spencer Rattler. Does he take it up a notch this season, Darren?
I think there's the potential that he does, because all the conversation out of Columbia has been simplified offense. Apparently part of what was going on last year with Satterfield and his offense was it was too much. That being said, I still think one of the things you have to be prepared for if you are a South Carolina fan is this offensive coordinator hire could be an absolute bust. Dow Loggins has not had success anywhere he's been. I know it's the NFL, but he has not had success anywhere he has been as an offensive coordinator. And I think that has to be a realistic. You're not being realistic if you don't think that's a possibility. So I think all the concern is on the offensive side of the ball. I think it could be an absolute disaster from the word go. And I think if we've seen anything, unfortunately, with Spencer Rattler, is if things start to go off the rails, they can get off the rails quickly with him. It could become a kind of a disheveled mess in a hurry. That's my concern for their offense. That being said, if the mistakes of the past for the offensive coordinator have been learning experiences for him, and everything you're hearing out of the South Carolina camp is true, that Spencer Rattler has really grasped this simplified offense and is working well within it. I mean, the talent is there, obvious. And they could still – they could catch some people off guard. If he comes out looking like he did when he was a freshman, man, who knows what that looks like. There could really be some amazing things or incredible things happen with them this season.
There are a lot of questions on the offensive side of the ball.
Definitely. I think
you hit it right on the head, Darren. On the defensive side of things, Clayton White returns as defensive coordinator. He's had a coaching career of over 20-plus years. Mm-hmm. In 2022, the Gamecocks forced 23 turnovers, which put them at second in all of the SEC. And they were first in the SEC in interceptions with 15. So the defense stepped up big time last year, but they lost – 3 players to the NFL. They struggled to stop the run.
Yep.
So they're going to rely on linebackers like Debo Williams and Mohamed Kaba and a terrific safety, freshman All-American, SEC All-Freshman team, Nick Emenwori. and I'm not making fun of the name. It's just that I don't want to get the name wrong because I know how important people's names are. And I don't like it when someone mispronounces my name. So I was trying to slow myself down there. Nick Emenwori. Is that right? Is that correct? Yes.
That sounds right to me. Yes.
Okay. But terrific, absolute terrific player.
Yes, and, very much so.
So I think their strength is going to be on the defensive side of the ball.
And you know, is kind of what it looks like, how it sets up, especially with what they do bring back. As long as they can shore up that run defense, they've obviously got some experience on that side of the ball. And from a coordinator perspective, that is definitely the side of the ball you have more confidence in when you look at the coordinators, for sure.
Mm-hmm. So let's look at South Carolina's schedule before we move on. They open up. I love the opening game for them. North Carolina. What a great idea. I don't know whose idea that was, but terrific.
Fantastic.
That's a game that I want to watch.
Yep, definitely. Definitely.
And then they have Furman, which, yeah, but I understand because then they have Georgia the next week. Oof. And I think, do they travel to Athens for that one?
Yes.
Yeah. And then they have Mississippi State at home. They go to Knoxville to play Tennessee. They've got Florida at home. They go to Missouri. They go to A&M. Then they've got Jacksonville State, Vanderbilt, Kentucky at home. So three straight home games before they finish with Clemson.
Yep.
Not an easy schedule.
No, and at least the Clemson game is at home because, honestly, everything we talked about with the Missouri schedule, it's kind of the opposite with South Carolina. They've got to go to Athens. They've got to go to Knoxville. They've got to go to A&M. That's tough. And the thing that makes the back end of that schedule even worse is, let's say things do get off the rails offensively. At Georgia, it's going to be ugly. At Tennessee is going to be ugly. You come in limping to Missouri, I think Missouri is going to be good enough that they can make you pay for that. So especially when you're having to go to them, then you come out of what will obviously be a demoralizing loss to Missouri, just because if you're a South Carolina fan, you think you can, that's a game you think you can win. And so you probably see it as a must win. Then you come out of that and have to go to Kyle Field and play A&M. And then you've got Vanderbilt and Kentucky sitting there, which, depending on how their seasons go, are going at that point, that could be a pretty ugly warm-up for Clemson. This could be a schedule that absolutely obliterates them. This is a very tough setup for them. If I'm a South Carolina fan, I don't have a whole lot of positive feels looking at this schedule at all.
It is going to be a tough, tall order for Beamer Ball this season.
Yes, definitely. There better be a lot of Beamer Ball, some special teams.
Let's go over to Nashville, Tennessee. I'm not sure.
Yes, we should.
how many cities do you know have grown like Nashville has? It's absolutely insane. I went through there last year and I about lost my mind, Darren.
Yeah, it's just I was talking to JT Jazzy Chef actually last week, and with his job, he does a lot of travel in and out of Nashville, and he said it's crazy. It still catches his attention sometimes when he's driving through downtown. Just even over the last 5-10 years, how dramatically it's not even the same city it was 5 or 10 years ago. It's just incredible the amount of growth that's taking place there.
Man, every time I drive through a city like that, I'm reminded just how slow-paced life is in Louisiana.
That's exactly right.
It's just like, what are you people doing? Why are you driving so fast? And you're honking your horns and you're yelling and you're using sign language and all that stuff. And we don't do that here. Nobody ever honks their horns here. Well, we're in Nashville because we're talking about your Vanderbilt Commodores, Darren. Coached by Clark Lee in his third season, with a record of 7-17 overall. Mm-hmm. Improvement. A 2022 record of 5-7 overall, 2-6 in the SEC. Offensive coordinator Joey Lynch. When I look at their offense, I know you got quarterbacks like A.J. Swan and Mike Wright, only 6 interceptions. That's the fewest in the SEC last year. But that offensive line, Darren, this is something to really be proud of. They gave up a little over 1 sack a game, which put them at 4th in the SEC. So a strong point for Vanderbilt.
Very much so. And not only is it did they have a strong performance last year, but the largest majority of those starters, as a matter of fact, they have 7 guys back that have starts in their past. So that is a huge point of emphasis. People are very excited about A.J. Swan. This is not typically, as a Vanderbilt fan, the kind of quarterback talent that you see step on the field for Vanderbilt. This guy, let's see, make sure I'm going the right way here. This guy right here, there's been some comparisons. People are as excited about him, about A.J. Swan, as they were about Jay Cutler, and making some comparisons to him. It's been a long time since people were this excited about a quarterback. The last time people in Nashville were this excited about a quarterback, Luke Bryan was singing Shake It For Me to his baby rattler. Come on, that's a good one, right? I was proud of that. It's been that long since they were excited about a quarterback, but they are very excited about A.J. Swan.
That's just wrong. That's just wrong.
The only offensive concerns is the tight end room and the running back room. You lose a 1,000-yard rusher. That's an issue. Not a clue who's going to be next. And the tight end room, Cole Spence had a season-ending injury before they even got out of the spring, and he was the one they were looking at. And so that's just a real – that's a jumbled mess in the tight end room. Thankfully – the other thing that people are very, very excited about is wide receiver room. So even if they can't do what they've done in the past with a tight end, a dependable tight end, they have wide receivers. They have, and other schools have this a lot, but they have had two different guys show on their GPS 20 plus miles per hour, full pads in practice. That's not something Vanderbilt sees a whole lot, that kind of speed, especially out of the wide receiver room. So they are very, very excited about that as well.
On the defensive side of the ball, Nick Howell returns as the defensive coordinator, where the Commodores led the SEC in defensive touchdowns last year. Pretty impressive. And then they've got some good safeties, DeRicky Wright, C.J. Taylor, and how do you think they're going to be on the defensive side of the ball this year? Step up, lead the SEC in defensive touchdowns again?
Possibility because of the defensive line, you know, that front seven or front, I guess for them would be more along the lines of like a front six. But so that I think there's definitely a possibility for that. For them, the defense, the backfield of the defense is the biggest concern. What is corner and what is safety going to look like? They specifically have really struggled in giving up the boundary on the defensive side, leaving that open, not being able to cover it, you know, a slot receiver coming out and getting to the boundary and being faster than whoever was covering them. That's a enormous weakness that they have to figure out how to keep that from happening again. If they can figure that out, that'll help a lot. The defense is, I think, more of a concern than the offense is, kind of the opposite of what we were talking about with South Carolina. I think those two things are flipped. I think people are very excited about the offense at Vanderbilt and a little bit afraid of just exactly what this is going to look like, hoping that this being the second year in Nick Howell's system, that will show some dividends and show some improvement, but still – the side of the ball that people are a little bit more afraid of or concerned about.
Well, they are expecting big things. They are doing a massive renovation of the stadium, which when you see a school putting money into their football program, yep, that means they believe they have a bright future ahead of them. So let's look at the
expected things.
And they start off as the only SEC team to play in week zero. We've got games Saturday, yes, Darren.
We've got games.
Hawaii is coming to Nashville.
Yes. Yes. And, this is a game that they should win. There's just no other way to say it. Hawaii was awful last year. They've had a horrible the offseason coming into last year. They lost like 40 players off their roster to the transfer portal. They should show some improvement, but then they also have the burden of travel, and that's a long travel. So when you look at these two teams, you know, I think last year the final score ended up being in the 60s for Vanderbilt. I don't know that would be the case, even though I think the offense has improved. I think you have to give Hawaii some credit. I think the opening line for this is 17.5, so it wouldn't surprise me if it was, again, a three-score game. But this should be a SEC week zero win for Vanderbilt.
For the second straight year, it appears, if this pans out, that Vanderbilt will be the top seeded. They'll be first place in the SEC.
I am very excited, but we will definitely talk about that we are for the second year in a row started the season off number one in the conference. Just saying, we've got to talk about that when it happens.
Well, after their matchup with Hawaii, they have Alabama A&M coming to Nashville. Then they travel to Wake Forest. They travel to UNLV. Boy, that's a long trip.
Yes.
They've got Kentucky and Missouri at home. They go to Florida, have Georgia at home. They go to Ole Miss. They have Auburn at home. And then they finish on the road, two straight road games at South Carolina and at Tennessee. So I'm looking at Georgia, Ole Miss, Auburn, South Carolina, Tennessee. I mean, even go up to Florida. That's not a very kind schedule.
No. No. And the Coach Lee, all of his conversation this offseason has been getting to postseason play. The only way that happens is they cannot drop one of those first four games. They have to head into the Kentucky game 4-0, because then at that point, you at least are giving yourself a shot. The Kentucky game is very scary to me. I think Kentucky may really turn some heads this year. So don't know, being in Nashville helps. But when you look at Missouri, Florida, South Carolina, those three, I think they have to grab two of those three games to truly make it a postseason possibility, because that final stretch, even though Auburn is there, you do have to travel to Auburn. Final stretch of Ole Miss, Auburn, South Carolina, Tennessee, and that's tough. I would prefer them go ahead and knock off Missouri and Florida back-to-back and get those six wins. And then if you sneak up on somebody else, that's fine, because those four games, that's a tough way to end a season.
It is. It's SEC football.
Yep, absolutely.
We are excited to watch the games, and we hope you are as well. And we'd like to invite you to join us in CBS Sports Pick'em. We did this last year and had a great time. We hope that you'll join us for the picks this year. And Darren, will you tell everybody what it is and how they can get involved?
And what we'll do this year, we'll do the same thing we did last year. We're going to do strictly SEC games. We're going to be able to do that because it's with CBS Sports. But this year, we can also tweet out a link. We can put the link out on YouTube. And the password for the group is Pick'em with a capital P, P-I-C-K-E-M, 1-2-3-4 exclamation point. You will need that when you click on the link to join the group. You have to create your CBS account if you haven't already, your CBS Sports account. You have to do that separately. And then after you've done that, you join the group, and that's your password to get into the group. They do require that, but that'll be in the link as well. We'll put that on social media, all of our social media. As a matter of fact, it's already been out there, but we'll do it again. We'll also put it on in the description. See if I can do this right. There we go. In the description down below, it'll be there with the link and the password. And then we'll also put it on our link tree as well, which there will be in the description down below. That link will be there as well. But we're excited. We want to have a big group. I think we've already got at least five or six already signed up before we even really started talking about it, which is super exciting. And we're hoping to get a lot of people, because the more the merrier. It really is more fun. And we'll talk about each week our standings and where we are and who's winning. And that's always part of the fun every year to be able to do that.
Yeah. So please join, be a part of that. And let's have some fun making these picks this year. Thank you again for watching. I want to encourage you to subscribe to us on this YouTube channel. That goes a long way in helping us get a greater footprint out there. Follow us, subscribe to us on the podcast. If you're listening on the podcast, that means a lot to us. Like us, rate us. All those things carry an immense amount of weight, and it's a way that you can make your voice heard, and it also benefits us. So if you like what you hear, what you see, then please do that for us. We'll still be here week after week throughout the college football season. We hope you'll still be joining us every single week. New episodes drop every Tuesday, 6 a.m. You don't have to get up that early. You can listen or watch whenever is convenient for you. So until next Tuesday, y'all take care.
Great week.
Thank you for making the Brew and Shaver Sports Podcast your go-to sports show. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show if you haven't already. Your feedback is so important. Let us know what you think about this week's show. Send an email to brewandshavers@gmail.com or a text to our text line 318-390-3599. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you again for listening to the Brew and Shavers Sports Podcast. See you next week.